Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, coming to you live from Rochester, New York, via the Paranormal Radio Network, and also on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. And apparently it's Mardi Gras season down there. I am loving this music. This is so cool. For more information on the show and on my guests, visit our website at www.keyholepublishing.com. I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. And as always, I want to hear from you. If you're listening live tonight, join us on the message board to discuss the program and add your questions and comments. Go to ParanormalRadioNetwork.com to join us in the virtual auditorium, and you can participate in the conversation there through instant messaging. You can also email me anytime with your questions and comments. The address is kdolan@rochester.rr.com. You can also call into the show toll-free at 1-877-786-0562. And if you missed any of that, it's all on the webpage at www.keyholepublishing.com. Okay, before I get started, I just want to make one announcement. The International UFO Congress is accepting registrations for their annual conference in Laughlin, Nevada. I want to remind everybody, this is a week-long event. It's held the last week of February, the entire week, and it's at the Aquarius Resort and Casino in Laughlin. There will be more than 30 presentations, 30 different speakers from around the globe, as well as a week-long film festival, a meet-the-speaker cocktail party, which is an absolute hoot, and an awards banquet at the end of the week. It's also very affordable. The price now that we've passed the early registration deadline, I believe, is still only $5.39 per person for the entire event. And that includes the entire week's worth of presentations. It includes the banquet ticket, the cocktail party ticket, and it also includes your hotel room for the entire week. So the only other thing you got to pay is to get out there, which is actually not that much. So check into it. It is going on. It's going to be in Laughlin for the last time this year. This is the 19th annual UFO Congress event. And starting next year, it will most likely be moved to the Arizona area. So if you've ever been thinking, I want to get out to Laughlin, do it this year. Go to ufocongress.com for more information on that and to register. There's also a complete list of speakers and topics there, so you can see. If you can't go for the entire week, pick a day. You know, see who you want to listen to and head out. It's going to be really, really fun. Okay, this evening, I'm trying something a little different. Normally, I speak with one guest for 2 hours. Tonight, I have three guests I'm going to talk with for 2 hours. If any of you have checked the website to see what I'm going to be talking about this evening, you'll see that I've raised the question again that I hear all the time at UFO conferences, which is, what is going to happen in the future when all of the current researchers decide that they've had enough, they're tired of doing this, they are ready to retire, ready to whatever, move on. What's going to happen to the field of ufology? Because people always say there aren't enough young people in this. Okay, well, I got a couple of young people together here, and I want to say it's a representative sample. Some of you may or may not agree with me about how representative my sample is, because, okay, I reached close to home. I got my two kids, who might not be typical, shall we say, having been brought up in the household that they were. And I also brought in a young man from outside the family who is a friend of the family. And I'm actually curious to see what some of his opinions are on these things, because we don't really talk about it that much. So I have a young lady who is 11.
Hello, New Orleans.
This is Elaine Dolan, my daughter. My son, Michael, who is 13.
Hello, everyone.
And I have Jordan Shiro, who is, I forget, 15? Oh, my gosh. He's enormous, by the way. He's way taller than me. Of course, so is my 13-year-old, so what am I saying? So, hey, everybody, welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, I want to start just mainly talking about the UFO question originally, because that's the one that people keep asking me. You know, whenever I go to conferences, researchers will say, oh my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to pull more young people into this? So I'm curious. Mike, let's just start randomly with you. Now, you've grown up in a house where we talk about UFOs. Your dad, obviously, is a UFO author and researcher. I've been doing this radio program on this topic. You've grown up knowing that we believe in this. We have a house full of books. I don't know even if you've read many of the books or just talked about it with us. But what do you think? I mean, do you believe that UFOs exist? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it seems fairly reasonable an assumption to me to say that, yes, they do. There are, the universe is practically infinite, or so we think for now. And it would be arrogant to assume that we're the only intelligent life here. And to think that something more advanced than us has visited seems, at the very least, plausible.
Okay, so you're going on a philosophical and logical basis. Okay. Jordan, how about you? What do you think?
Well, my parents, when in my household, we're not, I've never really had an opportunity to discuss these things, but I find that I agree with Michael. In a universe that is, as we know it, infinite, I think it would be very arrogant and illogical to assume that we're the only intelligent life forms out there. And moving beyond that, it seems even a natural progression to assume that some of them came before us.
Okay. Lane, sorry to make you wait till last.
No, it's okay. I've actually always thought that how could we be the only ones? I mean, with whatever creator or powerful being that created the universe and everything like that, would they really spend all their time on one planet in this infinite universe? And, I mean, and also what we do to the Earth is just, you'd want to make a lot more instead of just one.
Oh,
so
backup.
I've always thought about that.
Excellent point. I hadn't thought about I never considered it that way, that, you know, you want to have a backup in case the beings you create to populate the planet that you created screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, with how we treat the planet is just, you would want some more. So it would seem very, pretty much what the guy said about...
Okay.
Okay, pretty much what the guy said about thinking that we're the only one.
Okay, so still you're all going based on logic and philosophy, really. You're saying, well, you know, it doesn't make sense that we would be the only ones in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What about evidence? Have any of you considered any cases where people have said they've seen things? Or have you seen things? Or... you know, what about the factual stuff? Have you seen anything?
I personally haven't seen anything. I mean, really, that you could, like, write down and tell people and say, this is, like, a really good case. I've heard of some cases, and they seem fairly plausible to me. I don't know still, like, if they're true or if they're just, because I don't know, but...
Mm-hmm.
They seem very plausible.
That's always a problem in this field. You know, even researchers who've been doing this for a very long time frequently have not seen anything themselves,
mm-hmm.
which I always find really interesting. These people have talked to witnesses and have read about cases, and it catches their interest, and they want to look into it more.
Mm-hmm.
And another perennial problem is, how do you know whether the person who's reporting a sighting is telling the truth?
Yeah.
Or maybe they think they're telling the truth and they're not being accurate. Or maybe they are being accurate and they're just misinterpreting what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always a difficult question. Jordan, you seem like you have something to add.
The thing that always confounded me from the UFO issue is that I find that there is a lot of evidence out there of people who say that they have experienced or they have sighted UFOs at some point or another. They've seen something that seems out of the ordinary, and they don't quite know how to explain it, but they do the best that they can. It always interested me because I think that with all of the sightings that are out there and all of the different information that we have on the topic, it seems, again, illogical to assume that all of them are fakes and all of them are phones. And it seems like that would be the wrong way to go. Because with what we were saying earlier, with the fact that there's so many planets out there, I think that it would, that if some of them have to be real, in my opinion. And I it always interested me that people always talk about the conspiracy and the cover up, and how people, and how the government is hiding all of these UFO sightings. And I was always, I always wondered why they would bother. What would be the point of hiding it from the public? Because it seems a perfectly logical thing to assume that they exist, and it seems a harmless thing in all reality. I never understood why they would do that.
So from that point of view, the cover-up theory would almost seem to support the concept that there are no UFOs, because there would be no reason to cover it up, therefore they must not be covering anything, therefore there is nothing.
Right. But it, again, that makes it, the whole, that contradicts what we said earlier with the fact that it seems illogical that there aren't any UFOs. Like, there should be UFOs, and there should be alien life forms out there. So it, the whole thing seems very illogical to me, and I've never quite understood that. So.
Interesting. That's another paradox, really, that a lot of researchers come up against. You know, is it out there or is it not? If it's not out there, why all the fuss? Why, when you try to call the FCC to find out if anything was in the air on a certain day when, you know, 40 people saw something, why do they say, no, we don't have any records on that? And you know they keep records.
Right.
Why don't they just say, yeah, well, I'm looking at the record from that day and there wasn't anything? Or, you know, but sometimes records will disappear,
right,
which is in circumstances sometimes that are highly illegal. I mean, records that are not supposed to be destroyed will be missing or shredded, or people will just deny that there ever were records, which is just very strange. And that tends to raise hackles of researchers. In my experience, that tends to make researchers, that, you know, somebody who has a minor interest will come across something like that, and then that gets them hooked. So, how about you, Mike? Have you seen anything? Have you based? I'm looking at the evidence side of UFOs. Have you studied any cases or seen anything yourself?
I have studied a few cases. I think the most gripping, actually, I would have to say, are the cattle mutilations, which they are completely unlike anything, well, frankly, that I think should be. The cattle are found missing internal organs, drained of body fluid, with incredibly precise cuts that couldn't come from any known implement in this world.
Okay. Yeah, and there again, people will say, well, something like this, you would have needed a laser, almost, to do something like this. Except sometimes they'll say even a laser couldn't have made a cut quite like this.
Right.
And the official story that's given out will be, oh, it was predators. Like coyotes with lasers? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
yeah, again, that's the kind of thing that tends to draw people into researching this sort of thing and saying, you know, clearly there's something more to this. So, okay, it just occurred to me, I'm giving you guys my opinions here. Mike brought up, oh, first of all, I just want to mention that I misspoke, and I want to thank Rich on the chat room. When I referred to the FCC, I was thinking of the FAA, and he pointed that out, the Federal Aviation Administration, not the Federal Communications, whatever the other C stands for, because I just went blank on that, too. Because being in radio, I think FCC first. Okay, but thank you for catching that. But since we gotten in, we've gotten into the cattle mutilation, what do you guys think about that phenomenon? I mean, Mike just brought up the topic, and we understand a little bit of his thought on it, which is that, yeah, there's an anomaly here. How about you, Elaine?
I think that it's just, I actually don't know much about them.
Okay.
Or anything about cattle mutilations, but I've never known why they would, I never even thought about why they would want to take anything from our cattle and just anything like that. So I'm not really very useful right now, so I don't really know much about the cattle mutilations.
Okay, so. Well, you don't need to know much about it. I'm finding it interesting that you guys haven't looked into this, especially I'm finding it very interesting that my own two kids have not really looked into all of this, probably because you guys get enough of it at the dinner table, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Not cattle mutilations at the dinner table, but, you know, the rest of this. Darn, I had a point that I was going to make, and it got away. But, Mike, did you want to say something?
No, actually. Sorry.
Okay. Jordan, what are your thoughts on cattle mutilations?
Moral or no?
Are you for or against?
Okay.
Well, actually, before we start, I just want to mention, I think I got that thought that was flitting around. A lot of people, skeptics, have said, oh, the cattle mutilations, you know, it's the ranchers doing it themselves. They want to collect on the insurance money for the cattle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time something like this comes up, either a UFO sighting or an anomaly like a cattle mutilation or Bigfoot sighting, and I'm hoping to touch on a lot of these other things as well, there will always be somebody who will come up with some reasonable explanation for it that, in my opinion, when you look closer, is not all that reasonable.
Indeed.
So, but I don't want to, I'm doing it again. I really am trying not to tell you guys what I think. I'm trying to just sort of open the door to more discussion.
I think that if you use your example as the ranchers themselves were using it to collect on the insurance for the cattle, I think that to some extent that would make sense. But if you use the description of the incredibly precise cuts as Michael said it a moment ago, I think that that seems a very illogical thing to assume, because really they would have to be professional surgeons on the side of being a rancher, and that makes no sense to me. And I think that reason is flawed. And if you think about it for any real period of time, these flaws and these reasons become obvious.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. Thank you. You're right. I've heard a lot of cases where maybe a veterinarian is brought in, and they'll look at these animals and they'll say, I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, I don't know who did it, but it wasn't me. And they come down and they eventually have to say, well, I guess it was predators, but
right.
It doesn't seem to make much sense.
I think the whole idea of UFOs have been played off as something that insane people believe in, that it's not something
mm-hmm.
that is real, it's not something that ordinary people that should believe in. But I think that if you look at the evidence as it's being presented in this case at least, I think that it becomes obvious that once you eliminate, as you know, Sherlock Holmes said, once you eliminate all the, I apologize.
Eliminate the impossible.
Eliminate the impossible, then all of this, whatever's left must be the truth. Right. And
right.
I think that once you eliminate the fact that if the veterinarians are coming in saying that they couldn't have done that, mm-hmm. at what point do you stop? I mean, it mm-hmm. seems obvious that there has to be something higher, something mm-hmm. more advanced taking care of that, in my opinion.
Okay. I just want to ask you guys one more time. I know this came up, but I don't recall. Have any of you read or researched any cattle mutilation cases, for example?
I have not, no.
Okay.
I haven't, no.
Okay.
I have not in much detail, though.
Okay. Because I know, I mean, we watch DVDs at home sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rich and I go to conferences all the time. We come home with presentation DVDs. Or sometimes on the History Channel, they do all these programs that occasionally we get to see because
mm-hmm.
We don't have cable, which is still a sore spot in our... I'm getting a hairy eyeball from my daughter here. But we do sometimes get hold of DVDs and we watch them. So, yeah, I wasn't sure how much you guys were actually interested, because when I'm watching these, I'm really interested and I'm not...
Mm-hmm.
Looking around the room to see who's watching the TV, I'm watching it. And I know for a long time when you guys were really little, we tried not to talk about it in front of you. In fact, we tried very hard to shield you from it when you were little, because I thought it was scary. You know, I thought it was scary myself, and I didn't think it was appropriate for children. And you're even now kind of at the edge of where I would think this is appropriate.
Yeah.
So.
With the family that we've been brought up with, it's just normal to us.
That's scary.
Mutilation is the norm.
Oh, dear Lord. Welcome to the Dolan household, guys.
Oh,
and Rich is in the chat room listening to this, so this is really funny.
Oh,
hi, honey. So I'm the only one watching the chat room, though, so I have to keep passing this on. Boy, once again, I had another thought. I am so flummoxed. I got a room full of people here tonight, and usually I am just, it's just me on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so now I'm like, not only do I have people in here watching me do this, which I usually don't, but I'm trying to watch the chat room and watch the room full of people, and I'm being stared at.
I'll give you like an eye walk.
Okay. Oh, my Lord. Okay. I'm getting a question on the chat room, actually, about why do the kids think there might be a cover-up? And I, you know, that could be taken in a couple different ways. Why, what do you think might be the reason for the cover-up? Or why do you think there is one? So either way, Elaine looks like she has something to say on this.
Oh, well, I've actually asked my dad this a few times, and he would say, oh, well, that's a deep story.
Pat you on the head and says, you know, run along, little girl.
Yeah.
You little scamp.
But I heard from him and also thought that this is very plausible is because they don't want to start connection and getting all these people being afraid of, like, invaders from mm-hmm. Mars coming to Earth, and they're going to come in spaceships with lasers, and they're going to kill us all, and just mm-hmm. stuff
right,
like
I mean,
this.
I mean, after the cattle mutilation.
I was just
going to
say, exactly, you know, we see all these cattle. Mm-hmm. You know, what if they start doing that to people? I mean,
yeah,
maybe they don't see any difference.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the only real reason that I can think of that they would
yeah.
want to cover this up.
Yeah, and actually, as Mike just pointed out, there are a couple of not very publicized cases that seem where people appear to have been assaulted in the same way or in a similar way to mm-hmm. how the cattle have been. So, yeah, it's a valid concern.
And, you know, I think of what you just said, the fact that it hasn't been very publicized, gives evidence that, you know, why would it not be publicized? That seems like it would be something that everybody would be hearing about.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's an incredibly strange thing that, you know, I honestly had not heard of until you just said that. So.
I didn't hear about it for years.
Mm-hmm.
After I started going to UFO conferences, I still did not hear about it for a couple of years. And I have heard about it at one presentation at one conference, and it's like this dirty little secret that even in the field people don't talk about.
Right.
And I saw photos, and it was nasty. It was really scary, and I came home from that one thinking, no way am I telling my kids about this, and here I am doing. Of course, that was years ago, so you guys are older now.
Yeah.
And there are very few cases like that. Now, did anybody else have any comments they wanted to make on that before we move on? Because there's another question I want to bring up.
I actually did. This is going to probably sound very odd, but I saw the movie Monsters vs. Aliens mm-hmm. about a month ago, and it was actually pretty cool. And one thing that I noticed was in the news, they said everything about aliens coming to Earth and just everything about UFOs in the news, in the movie. And I thought, wow, that is so strange. We never do that here. That would be totally different. Like, never even think about putting that in the news or any way publicized.
That's a great point. You know, I saw that movie with you, and you're right. That didn't even strike me. But you're right. It was all over the news in the movie when the aliens came. And in real life, you know, you hear about it
mm-hmm.
because your dad and I get all these, we're on all these internet news groups and things, so we hear about sightings.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not in the paper, and they're not on the TV, and they're not on the radio.
Never, those are.
I mean, in these movies, you know, in many, many movies, whenever there's something like a UFO, then a UFO sighting anywhere. It's all over the news in a lot of these movies. And I think that partially, maybe, that might be, you know, people would think that if there are really UFO sightings, then why aren't they in the news? I think that might be helping the whole cover-up thing.
I hear people say that. Well, if they were real, we'd hear about it. The government would tell us, which is always good for a laugh at a UFO conference. If you say, I mean, that line is always, yeah, right, they'll tell us.
Sure.
I'm really glad you brought up the movies, too, because that was another thing I want to ask you guys about, is, you know, what is your perception of UFOs and aliens, and how much of it do you think has come from factual accounts of things that people have actually seen, and how much of it is coming from the movies? And then I was wondering, like, how accurate these perceptions were, how accurately it's presented in the movies, and how well does that match what people are really reporting? So,
well,
you all look like you're kind of, I don't know, anybody want to jump in? Mike?
I think that there is a great deal of difference between what is actually reported and what is presented to the public, and I actually haven't given this enough thought to know how much my perceptions were influenced, but...
Okay, well, what movies have we seen? You know, Elaine just brought up Monsters vs. Aliens, which was a really cool, you know, kids' animated movie. Yeah, there was an evil alien who wanted to take over the world. I'm trying to remember this because I only saw it one time.
Yeah, there was an evil alien who sent this space probe to the world, and he tried to take over the world, and this girl got hit by a meteorite, and she got some sort of superpower that made her huge. And the alien actually wanted to extract that power or whatever was in the meteorite that hit her so he could use it and take over the world.
Okay.
And the aliens came in at a point where after she became giant, they took her to a facility, I believe, that was supposed to be like Area 51, where they had a bunch of different aliens that were there, and they sort of formed a superhero team, if you will.
Okay.
That they began to fight the evil invaders.
And they won.
Indeed they did.
Here we are.
Because the country always
won. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, about the Area 51, because I'd forgotten that. But you're right. They took all of the people who'd been affected by the radiation to this secret facility, sort of an X-Men kind of thing.
Right.
Pretty much.
And that all probably came out of the whole radiation thing in the 50s and 60s. I'm expecting people on the message board to jump in here because I actually don't know about the history of the comic books. I'm not seeing anything. Okay, I'm going to... Okay. Okay, so what other movies we got? I mean, there's one fun kids movie. Elaine?
I want to bring up Invader Zim. It's not a movie, but it is a show which we watch all the time, and it's very fun.
That is fun. And I do mention that when I have given presentations about alien images in the media presented toward children, aimed at children. Invader Zim is a really funny one.
I'm sorry, but they just make him seem so fun and cuddly.
Harmless.
Pretty much, yeah. And they make him seem like a friend.
Well, he's supposed to be evil and scary, and he wants to conquer the Earth, but he's just little, and he's incompetent, and so he's not very scary. So that's a way of showing, okay, well, if you want to have these little green men with the big glowing red eyes and the antenna, which he does have, and he wants to come here and conquer the world, okay, but he's like 2 feet tall, and we really don't have much to worry about, because he never really does anything right. So, I mean, it's a great cartoon. It's really, really clever.
And we always watch it. It's just one of those shows that's just so normal for us. Like, hey, let's put on Invader Zim.
Now, one of the people on the chat room is saying it's interesting that there have been a few alien-related movies in the last year or two that have portrayed humans as the bad guys.
James Cameron's Avatar that just came out.
I haven't seen it yet, so no spoilers, but I saw a trailer and I really, really, really want to see it.
Right, and the way that I think of that is a very good point, is that lately, especially with this movie, which is big box office success, I'm being told.
Mm-hmm.
That's about how humans are coming to settle on this world, and it turns out that there's an indigenous species there that it just really portrays humans as the bad guys, and that just didn't happen for a while. I think that's a very interesting thing that's coming up a lot more recently.
I think maybe the turning point was movies like Men in Black, where they showed the aliens as okay.
Yeah.
You know, the humans weren't necessarily the bad guys yet,
right.
But the aliens weren't the bad guys either.
Right.
I mean, there was an alien who was a bad guy, but there were a lot of aliens who were not. They were
right.
just, in fact,
right.
they were living here,
right.
and we didn't know that they were living here because they were disguised. And that's, I don't know if any of you kids have heard about this, but a lot of researchers have said exactly that is happening, that there are beings from elsewhere who are here on Earth, like us, and they're living among us, but they are not like us. So Men in Black was pretty cool in that way, because it sort of raised that question, like, well, what if they were here? Almost like, what's that other movie that I really loved, and I don't even know if you guys have seen this yet, Alien Nation.
I haven't.
Any of you?
No.
I know I've mentioned it to you two.
Wanted to see it.
It's really, really good. I mean, the premise of that is that a huge ship full of very peaceful aliens crashed on Earth. They didn't land, and they didn't come here to take over. They were actually passing by, and they had to land. They had trouble with their ship. They ended up moving into our society. You know, they couldn't fix the ship. They couldn't leave, so they just had to live here. And fortunately, our planet was congenial to them. They looked different, but not terribly different. So, you know, you could pick them out, but they were really able to assimilate into society, and it was all about how they did that, you know, becoming part of society. And at the same time, it was a cop show, and it was, you know, this classic two cops work together. Well, one was an alien, one was human. So they'd run into these cross-cultural things all the time. It was a movie, and somebody on the chat room is agreeing with me. It was a brilliant movie. I think it was absolutely brilliant. Especially for that time, because it really was the first one, I think, the first one that I know of anyway, that brought up the whole concept of aliens living here and being people. You know, not being like these green tentacly things that want to come here and either shoot us or eat us. They just wanted to live. So I'm talking too much, and you guys are all being very polite.
Sorry about it, but I've always thought about with the whole aliens coming here to live. Mm-hmm. I've always thought that they want to learn more about us and want to live in our society so they could see more about how we live and what we do and just anything like that, because that's pretty much what we do with them. We want to see more about them. I mean, we're interested in them. So I think that they're very interested in us and they want to see how we live. We don't have the technology that they have to go to their planet and live in their society, but they have the technology,
mm-hmm.
so they can do just that
mm-hmm.
with us. So
now, when you just said, okay, they have the technology, so they're coming here and they want to know about us, but earlier we talked about, do you believe in them and do you even think they're coming here? Or I didn't say do you think they're coming here, but you know, when we talked about whether we all believe in UFOs, it was sort of a philosophical, logical answer, like, well, yeah, they must be, because it would be silly to think that there's no one else anywhere in the universe. So what are you basing that on when you say they're coming here and I think they want to learn about us? Is that, again, if they're here, that would be why?
I think that, well, that's pretty much what I'm trying to say. I mean,
okay.
they found our species, and they say, oh, look, another species. Well, let's see how this one lives. And so they come here, I mean, if they do at all, not making any assumptions or anything, but they might come here, and they would blend in and just see. They would think that either this is pretty stupid society or that this is actually very interesting. So mm-hmm. they would come here, if they come at all, and they would blend in and maybe get a job and get mm-hmm. money and actually live in our society.
Cool. So not quite like Diane Fossey and the Gorillas. Well, I wasn't actually making a joke. I mean, she went to study gorillas and how they live, mm-hmm. and she kind of concealed herself and watched them from a distance mm-hmm. and tried not to affect them at all, but just tried to watch them doing what they do mm-hmm. naturally on their own. And the alternative way of doing that would be actually to disguise yourself and infiltrate the culture, and which I guess you'd have to do the ones first. You'd have to watch for a while so that you would know how to disguise yourself and know how to behave
right.
so that you could infiltrate the culture. So maybe this is like phase two.
And that's, and that's why maybe we see them come here and then we see them for a second and then they know that we see them and then they go back.
You know, I think yes. an interesting point that a lot of people overlook is the fact that if you reverse the situation, if humans have the technology to really to visit the life that I believe is on other planets out in the universe, if we had the technology, I think that we as a species would go and we would investigate them, because that's just mm-hmm. our nature, is to go and investigate whatever it is, whatever's there, even just for the sake of the knowledge.
Yeah.
I think that is something that a lot of people overlook. The fact that if we were in their situation, we would probably do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I think we're hardwired to think that way. When we try to figure out why someone is doing something, you know, we look at an individual performing any action and try to assign a motive, the first thing we're going to do is say, well, why would I do that? And that can be really helpful, but sometimes if you're dealing with somebody who's from an entirely different culture, I mean really, really different, not like from Brooklyn instead of from upstate New York, which we deal with every day in this house, by the way, you know, it's not even like saying American culture versus Indonesian culture or something, which is pretty different. This could be even more different than that. I mean, we don't know.
Right.
But still, the best we can do is to start with what we know
mm-hmm.
and see if that works.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, a little while ago, you wanted to make a comment, and I don't even know what the topic was. Do you remember what it was? I'm sorry.
I don't know. It would be irrelevant at the time, or for this
okay.
part.
Okay. How about where we are now? Any thoughts?
I think that another logical assumption that it seems safe to assume that there are many groups and that for each or one or all of them, it could be a combination of all of these motivations and mm-hmm. tactics that they're using. Some may be observing us, some may be infiltrating us, some may be doing both. They may be studying us, they may be exploiting resources here.
It's mutilating our cattle.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, maybe. And that might be considered utilizing resources. We just don't know. We don't quite get it.
Right.
What exactly are they doing? I found it very interesting, Mike, that you said some may be doing this, some may be doing that. So you brought up a really good point that a lot of people at the UFO conferences are still having trouble getting their mind around, I think, which is the idea that there are more than, or there may be more than one.
Right.
When we go to conferences, I frequently get people coming up to me, and I see attendees coming up to a lot of other people and saying, well, what do you think? Where are they from? And why are they here? What do they want? Like, I don't know how many different groups we're talking about. You know, which ones do you
right.
mean? Because I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm trying to find out. I've talked to people who say there are more than 50 different types of aliens who are here on this planet now living among us. I have a hard time getting my mind around that. But I come back to the point that I don't know enough to say it's not true either. I mean, yeah, it sounds outrageous. And I have a really hard time accepting that. But at the same time, you know, who am I to say? It would be like if I were a person who lived in a desert And somebody who lived on a riverbank came up and told me what it's like, you know, when the, every spring when the ground floods and water comes up out of it. I'd be like, what? That sounds really implausible. But I don't know, because I don't live by a river. How am I supposed to say that doesn't happen?
Right.
And I'm sure some of my listeners are just want to slap me, because I'm like, I know there are people who think I'm very gullible because I will say that. I'm like, I don't know, okay? But, hey, that's my deal. I don't know. That's why I'm here, and I love interviewing people in different fields, because I get to ask them what facts they've looked at and what conclusions they've drawn over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this for almost 3 years now, and I thought by now I'd have some answers. And you know what? I've realized that I really, really, really don't know. There's way more out there than I thought. There's another question on the message board, which is an excellent one. How do you guys think, if an announcement were made, an official announcement, the government, you know, President Obama maybe, made a statement one day, said, okay, we're going to come clean. Aliens are real. UFOs exist. They're here. We're in negotiations with the pilots of these crafts. We're going to be discussing relations with them. How do you guys think that would change your world? Elaine, you're champing at the bit.
Well, I mean, it would be a huge change. That it might take me maybe a year or two to actually get used to, because we've never had that. It's always been... you know, UFOs are just, no, they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they never have been, they never will be. And just, like, from the government and stuff. And so it would be, like, this huge change.
Mm-hmm.
And, sorry, Michael, is this...
we got a little family thing going on here.
it would be this huge change, and, I mean, you have to be skeptical when you're... dealing with, I mean, this kind of topic, and what if everybody just came clean? Well, I mean, you still need to be skeptical, because you can't just, I mean, you can't just have these beings that you've never met, that look totally different, that everything is different about them, and they come, and they want to be friends with us, and live with us, and just be with us. You have to be skeptical. What if they want to mutilate us? What if they want to use us in tests and abduct us and just anything? What if they want to do all of that? So you have to be skeptical, and you have to actually think, well, should I trust them, or should I just... And so it's kind of tricky, but...
Well, don't we come up to that same question with people?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, with anybody you meet, even just people who were born here on Earth and don't have anything to do with UFOs, there are still going to be people who come up to you and want to tell you things that may or may not be true. And in dealing with anyone, you always have to have in the back of your mind this idea. And I know we talked about the kids were like 3, so,
uh-huh.
You know... yeah, anytime anyone tells you anything, you have to kind of think, is this good for me or is it good for them? Why would they want me to do this? What's in it for them? And, you know, sometimes people do have altruistic motives. Sometimes they really do have your best interest at heart. There are good people in the world, but there are also people who are not.
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to be aware of that. And also there are people who are good, but who are mistaken. Or misguided, or whatever else. I mean, you don't have to be nasty to people, and you don't have to push them away, but you do have to kind of think, do I want to follow what this person is telling me all the time, or not? I know we had a long discussion on questioning authority.
Indeed.
there was any other comments on that? Because there was another question that we could go to, but...
I had one, but I just forgot it.
Okay. I know, I've been doing that all... I am flustered, because I'm not used to having a whole room full of people here.
I think that after a while it will become a positive change. I think that a lot of humans... Pardon me. Referring to us as humans.
Yeah, well, that's easier.
Right. mean, I think that humans would look at it as almost like another form of racism in a lot of different cases, where you've got, if you look at how bad racism is nowadays with people who simply have a different skin color than we do, but if you look at people who are actually completely different in the way that we are, I think that that would be opening opening up something that would be far worse in many cases. But also, on the other side of that, these people, these aliens or these, you know, the UFOs, might be able to offer us something that we wouldn't have otherwise. But I think that ultimately it would become a positive thing, and it, I think that it would make it so we could, we would become a better species as a result. We would be able to know that there are other people. We would be more knowledgeable of the world, of the universe around us, first of all, and we would be able to interact with it on a much more, on a much easier basis, be able to become mature as a species, in my opinion.
Okay, so you're talking about education, essentially, learning from another race or species or culture that would be coming here. I was wondering, too, whether you were touching on perhaps interbreeding. Because when you were talking about other species, you know, ETs coming here, I guess because I was flashing on that, the movie Alien Nation, and some of the differences were that the aliens had already been bred to be very, very strong, for example. And they had similar skin color to Caucasian humans in the movie, but they had, like, dots. They had, like, red spots. They didn't have any hair on their heads, and they had a line of red dots that went down their spine, which I thought was kind of cool, but, you know, looked really neat. But that, you know, their appearance was just different enough that you could apply everything, all the prejudices that had applied to people with different skin color, for example, applied to them. And I think they did, I don't know if they did it in the movie, but in the TV series that was a spinoff of that, there was at least one episode where they touched on civil rights. And, you know, whether the visitors, as they called them, should get the vote. You know, should they have the right to choose their government. And when that movie took place, they'd been there for 5 years. And they didn't have any plans to leave because they couldn't. They couldn't fix their ship. They couldn't get whatever it was they needed on Earth. So it was like, okay, here we are. We're going to be here. They wanted to be part of society. They wanted to vote, and they wanted to have some of their people in positions of power. And, you know, and it makes perfect sense. If, you know, if you live in a city that's primarily populated by this new race of people from a particular place, yeah, maybe you want your mayor to be one of you. And that was a real problem for some people. And it was portrayed really well. I think what it comes down to ultimately is fear. And probably any kind of oppression or any loss of civil rights of one group is a result of fear on the part of the other group. In this case, it touches on something very deep, I think, which is the fear that we're not at the top of the food chain. And, you know, maybe more literally than I meant. That was kind of a joke, actually. But now that I think of it, with the cattle mutilation thing and everything, and we don't know what they're here for. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't like thinking that human beings might not be in the image of God, perhaps.
Or if you say that God created us in our image, does that mean that there are other gods who created this species in their own image?
Ooh, good question. Because, you see, that always bothered me, because I always felt like, well, God is all-powerful. God can create everything. Why would I say he could only create one planet? Or why would I think he could only populate one planet? He can make whatever he wants. As many as he wants. You know, if he or she or it wants to make a dozen systems or galaxies, this is God we're talking about. You know, she gets to do whatever they want.
And
if they want to make Greys and Nordics and Reptilians, then they can do that too.
Sorry to interrupt, but with how powerful we, I say, I'm not trying to be totally skeptical about how powerful God or Goddess or whatever this higher being is. I'm just saying how powerful we say that this being is, then we're just proving the case more of, yeah, if they're that powerful, then it seems plausible that they would make more and that they would have the ability to make more. So why wouldn't they?
I think it seems more reasonable. I think you raise an excellent point. If, I mean, hey, if I were all-powerful, I wouldn't stop with one, you know? Well, look at human beings. You know, if somebody is a painter, for example, do they stop at one painting?
Right.
No. Uh-uh. If someone is a composer, do they write one song and they're done? No. And if they're really good at it, they do different styles. You know, if they're really talented and they really, really have this love of creating, they're not just going to write one kind of song. They're going to write a lot of different ones. And it's kind of cool seeing all the differences. So, yeah, I think that's a kind of neat way of looking at God. You know, and I've never really understood. It seems limiting to me when people say, well, there's one God and God created us and...
And
yeah, hang on, minor technical things here. God can be the image. This is off the web or the chat room. God can be the image of whatever life He creates. With man, He took human form and made us in the form He chose. So, does that mean God can also be little and gray with big black eyes?
I would say so.
I think God can be whatever He wants.
Yeah.
Or she.
He or she is almighty. And,
yeah.
I mean, if they have enough power to create the universe and everything in it, which is billions and trillions of whatever, it's then that being would have a lot of power, and then they could change how they look as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I can change how I look. I can color my hair. You know. Me and Miss Claire all day. So we've moved over into philosophy and religion. And oh, here's a question that came up on the chat room. And I want to apologize, too, to everybody who's typing in all these really cool questions on the chat room. I am actually turned around facing my guests this evening instead of sitting here on the telephone glued to the computer. So if I'm missing your question, I do apologize. I'm trying to be polite to everybody here and include everyone, and it's sort of beyond me. There is one question about alien abductions and contact. Now, I don't know how much any of the three of you really have gotten into this. I know that we've tried to shield Mike and Elaine very much from this. When you guys were little, we didn't talk about it. And Jordan, I don't know about your family, but I suspect you probably didn't hear much about this at home either.
I'm not sure if it was a concerted effort to keep it more than just to talk about it.
Well, right. I mean, in our family, we really made an effort not to talk about it. In most families, it doesn't come up. So, okay. But here's a question I'm just going to toss out. Most lifelong contactees, people who have contact with aliens, see UFOs, claim to see beings, and interact with them. They usually report having many encounters as children, and then these encounters taper off as they get older. And this is a very common thing I've heard from a lot of researchers. Like, by around the age of 30, it really drops off. But people report remembering things back as early as when they were about 4 and 5 years old is not unusual. Do you, three of you, have any opinions as to why ET might interact with contactees more when they're kids than when they're adults?
Well, you said that it really starts to taper off after about 30 years of age. So I think that using that as a backdrop for this, I think that from when you're born to when you're about 30, I think is when you go through, you grow up and you get to the prime of your life where you're in your peak physical condition, and then as you hit 30, it starts to go downward.
Mm-hmm. And that's when we get creaky.
Right.
And I've been there.
But I think that perhaps that has something to do with it, where if they are abducting people and want to I'll conduct tests on them, if you will. I think that it would make sense to choose the ones who are in the most best physical condition, and perhaps that has something to do with their age.
So it would seem like they're probably not trying to find a cure for cancer because they're not taking the older ones who are developing symptoms.
Right.
Or not maybe or what happens to our eyesight as we age and that sort of thing. And we actually, wow, we have blown through the entire first hour already.
Oh, wow.
And it's about time to go to break. So I think I'm going to wind down here, and we will come back in about 10 minutes or so, and we'll pick up where we left off. And just as a reminder, I can't believe I didn't do a station ID at the halfway point because I totally forgot, because I'm having such a great time talking with these guys. And just want to remind everyone, you are listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. I'm Karen Dolan, your host, and this evening I am talking with three young people about what they believe, what they know about UFOs, and we're going to touch on some other paranormal topics in the second hour. And these young people that I am interviewing this evening are my two kids, Michael, age 13, Elaine, age 11, mm-hmm. and friend of the family, Jordan Shiro, age 15. Don't go too far. We'll be back in about 10 minutes, guys. Thanks.
Are you interested in...
Everything hovering and everything environmentally friendly and just stuff like that, we would have all this technology. And so I'm thinking it might happen then when we have pretty much the same amount of technology. So it would be like, okay, we have what you have, so you would know if we're trying to kill you or hurt you or do anything.
Okay.
Right. You know, that would make sense to me. You know, you reveal yourself when you're on an equal level so that there won't be fear and pandemonium as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the problem I see with that is that would imply that they would stop developing, or at least slow way down, because otherwise we won't catch up.
Or,
but maybe if we need to get to where they are now, that could work. Or maybe they will. Maybe they would have a reason to stop where they are. Maybe they... I mean, if they understand, like, they've got everything they need, and if they knew that taking another step ahead would, for example, damage their environment, they might choose to stop where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe that would work.
Yeah, and then they would, and, yeah, they might think that that if they went any further, they would have, like, all of these different weapons that we would never even think of, and we would be terrified of. So they might just think, we'll stop for now, and then once we get to know them, we can make more, and we can show them, and we can teach them about all of these new inventions that we have. And so that's pretty much what I think.
Or even moving on, somewhat of a tangent from that, they could actually be in our society helping us move very quickly, because if you think about it, in the past 100 years, we've gone from the first motorized flight to people going into outer space, all these incredible, incredible things that have happened in such a short period of time. So I think that maybe that might be a result of that as well, that they might be helping us to advance quickly to catch up, maybe, just as a theoretical idea.
It could very well be, and quite a few of people would agree with that. They've said similar things, and I think you're on a really good track. Rich Dolan has brought that up in several of his presentations. He shows, you know, old paintings of ancient cultures with, you know, people harvesting wheat with a sickle or a scythe. And then he'll show a painting, a Van Gogh painting from not much more than 100 years ago, showing a farmer harvesting wheat with almost an identical instrument.
Right.
So that's a very long period of time where really nothing changed. And then we went from that to microchips and space travel, in a really, really short time. And that actually has prompted some people to say, maybe we are getting help. Mm-hmm. Maybe after the Roswell event in 1947, in which something crashed on a ranch in Roswell, New Mexico, which was initially identified as a flying saucer, and then immediately that statement was retracted by the military. I mean, the statement was put out by the military. Here's a flying saucer, and it was in the newspaper.
Right.
And then the next day they said, no, it wasn't. We made a mistake. It was a weather balloon. And, you know, a lot of people look at that and say, okay, fair enough. Yeah, people make mistakes. But the guys who said it was a flying saucer first were the guys who routinely pick up crashed weather balloons. You'd think they would have known if this had been another weather balloon.
Yeah.
And I would think that you would want your own military to identify a flying saucer with a weather balloon. And, I mean, you would want your military to know which is which.
I would like them to be able to tell the difference, That might come in handy someday.
Again, if you really move into the depth of what its cover-up may be, if you think about it, these extraterrestrials, if you will, might be assisting in the cover-up to prolong our ignorance because maybe we're not ready as a species yet. I think that might be a very plausible option, in my opinion.
That could very well be, right. There's a belief that perhaps some aliens survived the crash in Roswell in 1947, and, you know, not all of them, because people have reported seeing bodies that were not human, and later other people said, oh, those were crash test dummies. But Stanton Friedman has pointed out that crash test dummies were not in use until 5 years after the crash, so it probably wasn't that. Whatever it was, probably was not that.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, we talked in the first hour about how just these implausible stories, these implausible explanations, make people kind of prick up their ears and say, well, why would you say something like that? Why not just tell us the truth? Because that can't possibly be true, what you just said.
Maybe it puts us on the road to finding the correct answer, which,
mm-hmm.
if they handle it correctly, would take us a certain, a distance of time.
Yeah. Mike, you're being very quiet over there. He is still in the room, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I assume you're asking my opinion. Sorry
there
about
we go.
That. Anyway, my opinion is something of a combination of theories put out by everyone else, and like I said, there's rarely a single cause for any event.
Okay, so allowing for the fact that your theory is a combination of others, what is yours? What is that combination? What do you think happened in Roswell?
I think that something landed with beings not human. I'm not going to say from somewhere else, but non-humans.
Okay.
Landed or crash-landed evidently in Roswell. And that the U.S. military apparently interacted with them, picked them up from there, mm-hmm. took the bodies of any of them who had died in the crash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure. It's mm-hmm. not something I've given a lot of thought to.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of researchers are still kind of going back and forth. A lot of people around the world are still going back and forth on that. And, you know, I'm trying very hard to introduce these cases to you guys. And I don't really want to lead you. I don't want to say, well, here's what happened and here's what happened. And, you know, I'm trying to say, well, you know, here's what was in the newspaper and here's what one researcher found out and here's what a different person said. And, so I'm wondering whether people who are listening to this are thinking that, you know, I'm handing you a case and then you repeat back to me, but I don't think you're doing that.
Wow.
It sounds to me like you're really giving me your own opinions. One person on the message board is asking, I did mention your ages, but not everyone caught that. This message is, Karen, I'm very impressed with how mature these kids are on this subject, so quite a compliment to you guys.
Well, thank you.
She wants to know your ages, and I will just mention once again, my daughter Elaine is 11 years old.
Uh-huh.
And my son Mike is 13. He will be 14 in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend Jordan is 15, and will be 16 in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, all three kids are homeschooled, which I personally think has given them practice at critical thinking that the public school systems are just not able to give everybody. And, you know, I want to say I have a lot of respect for public school teachers. I don't know how on earth they do that job. I wouldn't be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can do this because I'm teaching two kids, and that makes it a lot easier for me to interact, you know, individually and really tailor things to them. But also you know, Mike and Elaine have grown up in a household with a lot of this. I mean, we have UFO books on every table and every floor practically in this house. So,
and I mean, my parents and my stepfather haven't really introduced me to the UFO ideas and any of these theories that are about the UFOs, but something that they've always had a vested interest in was teaching me how to think properly. So I like to I like to say that would help me to look at these situations and think about them from all the different perspectives, be able to consider those.
So you're able to look at what's actually
right
there instead of getting the party line. See, none of you three have seem to me to have gotten the party line, UFOs don't exist, there's no such thing, there's no government cover-up. I mean, maybe you haven't gotten anything at all one way or another on this, but you're all able to look at evidence that's presented to you and say, well, this seems plausible and that doesn't. I have to say, I totally agree with that comment. You guys all have really mature outlooks on the topics that we're bringing up. And, yeah, Mike just found a little alien toy that we have here that Rich and I brought back from Roswell years ago. It's a little spaceman with a big head and a silver suit. We have them all over. We used to have a Booba doll here, too, which I got because it looked like an alien.
I have him in my room.
Oh, that's where the Booba doll ended up.
I mean,
Elaine is the keeper of the Booba now.
I have it in my room.
Sorry, people, but...
Do you kids ever talk with any of your friends on this? I mean, I'm able to talk to the three of you. Does this ever come up with your friends? And what do they think about UFOs and ghosts and Loch Ness Monster and all that?
I mean, I talked to my friends about these cases and situations, and they would usually say, well, yeah, I mean, I guess it sounds plausible, but... Like, I don't think I believe it.
Okay.
Like, the only people that I can really talk to that actually really listen to what you're saying, as opposed to just thinking about, you know, what the stereotype is, I find that whenever I come over here and I discuss things here...
I was just
going to
say, it's us, right?
I mean, even though I come over here to hang out with Michael, I'll sit downstairs with Mr. Dolan, and we'll be talking about, you know, all these conspiracies. We just had a wonderful conversation on the Kennedy assassination about a week or two ago.
and it doesn't stop at that, because Michael and I will go off and we'll be doing our thing, but we'll keep talking about it. And it's good to be able to talk to somebody who is willing to have an open mind on it. And I find that Michael's probably my best outlet in that matter.
Cool.
Thank
How about you, Mike? Do you talk to any of your other friends about it, besides Jordan?
I do. There are a few other people I talk about these things with, and they all seem for the idea and existence of extraterrestrials that are here. They're open to ideas of the supernatural.
Okay, the impression I'm getting from the way you guys are talking is that other people, when they're presented with this information and told, you know, what do you think of this, they kind of feel like, yeah, well, why not? Okay,
yeah.
they're open to accepting it, but not very interested in it.
Right.
That's what it sounds like.
Right.
Because
yeah.
it doesn't really seem to affect daily life.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there are some other things, other topics that I wanted to ask you guys about. I'm afraid we're going to run out of time if we don't get on this. On a related note, what about cryptozoology, for example? What about things like the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, I mean, or anomalies like the Bermuda Triangle? I mean, these are things, again, that maybe don't affect our daily lives. But, I mean, I find them really interesting. But what do you guys think?
On anomalies, the Bermuda Triangle, for example, I see existence itself as a sort of fabric, and everything, all of existence, time and space, and any other elements going into it are woven into the fabric of existence, and there are gaps and torn threads within that fabric, creating anomalies such as this, an area that is completely different from the norm, in which the normal laws of the universe don't really apply.
Wow. My God, I think I'm sitting in a room with Stephen Hawking here.
Thank you.
I actually got that after I thought about it for a minute. That's a really interesting way of looking at it. Elaine, you look like you would like to make a comment.
I've always loved the Bermuda Triangle case, and I've always found it, I think, the most interesting, and I think that it might have something to do with extraterrestrials and aliens, and I don't actually know really what I believe, but I've thought that a plausible answer might be that they might have put this portal, or whatever you want to call it, in where the Bermuda Triangle is now, and that might, I've sometimes thought that that might be a way, an easier way to actually get people to them instead of going to the Earth and actually picking them up.
That's like a dimensional portal?
I've kind of thought about that.
Wow.
Again, I don't really know what I believe about the Bermuda Triangle, but I've always thought that that might be a good theory, like as if getting your food, not saying that they would eat you or anything, but insane, like in
I
that sense, like going to the market. You could go there and get the food, then come back.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have the food delivered to you through the mail, which would be a Bermuda Triangle or a portal.
I just had this flash, like, oh my God, we're takeout. Okay, I'm sorry. Whoa.
Humans aren't.
Yeah.
We don't count.
Oh my gosh. I live with you guys, and I'm still blown away by this. I'm going to sit down and talk with you guys about these things more. No, I'm going to pin you down and make you talk to me about them.
Don't do it.
I think we're actually having this conversation because they're on the phone and they're physically attached to my radio show here, so they can't go anyplace for another, 20 minutes or something. So, Wow. I need to thank all my listeners again, because I'm having a blast here. Gosh, you guys. Jordan, any thoughts on the Bermuda Triangle or any other anomalies that interest you guys?
I'm finding that I'm agreeing with Michael.
I'm losing your sound, Jordan.
Yeah.
There.
Okay. I think we're good. Because you're saying really interesting things, and I want to make sure we don't lose them.
Right. Well,
it's losing.
I think that I'm agreeing with Michael here. I find that a lot of that is actually, if I'm not mistaken, there is a theory about how the fabric of reality is basically time and space interwoven. So it's almost like a sheet of fabric, and when you put it's part of Einstein's theory of relativity. When you put these big masses down in the fabric, it affects things around it, and it makes sense to me that there could be anomalies somewhere in that. And I think that makes perfect sense. That could very easily be one of them. And honestly, I don't know that much about the Bermuda Triangle. I'm nowhere near an authority. So I honestly don't have that much of...
Okay, well, I'm not asking anybody here to be an authority on anything. I'm just kind of curious to know... Because some of these topics, like the Bermuda Triangle, for example, is one that has been on TV. There have been a lot of books written about it. But I don't know really how much interest is being taken of these things. We don't see the things that are on TV because we don't have cable. So, you know, I've read some books about it. I've read some old books about it. I don't really know. I don't know what you young people are into these days. I keep catching myself sounding like, oh my God, I feel so old. And I have to say, one thing that's blowing me away talking to you guys is your familiarity and your comfort level with things like, oh, the space-time continuum, yeah, and the fabric of space-time obviously has a couple of little, you know, nubs in the threads, and I'm going, okay, yeah, sure, I guess it would. Okay, you're just, I mean, I feel like I'm sitting in a room with a bunch of physicists here, and you guys are just totally at ease with this stuff, and wow, I'm completely blown away by that. And that's going to sound really funny to people who are listening because, you know, especially the ones who heard me say that you're all homeschooled, because presumably I have been teaching at least two of you something. And so you're feeling like, okay, I'm getting a physics lesson from you. Okay, gosh. I'm trying to think of what other anomalies are out there, because there are just so many.
If anyone on the message board would like to refresh our memories or suggest something,
yeah,
that
what
would
else?
Also be great.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there's the old favorites, the pyramids, there's the Loch Ness Monster is one. Elaine, did you want to talk about the Loch Ness Monster? What do you think about that? Because there have been a lot of theories about that one.
I actually think that one is a plesiosaur. Because, I mean, well, obviously I don't know...
Because we haven't taken her to Loch Ness yet, but
yes,
we're going to have to do
yet
that.
Being the key
and
word.
I don't know nearly as much as I would like to, actually, about the Loch Ness Monster, but I've thought that a plesiosaur, when the meteor hit that wiped out all the dinosaurs, the plesiosaurs and all of the underwater creatures would be able to go deep underwater, and they would be able to escape the radiation and all the fire and burning.
From the asteroid?
Yeah, the asteroid.
Okay.
It seems like if there were at least two or three left, they would be able to repopulate, and why wouldn't they still be around today? We can't wrap our minds around it because we've all heard from our parents, yeah, dinosaurs don't exist anymore. They
well,
were
not
dead.
You, but...
Well, no, not me. But, I mean, a lot of adults and some kids these days, we all think, oh, yeah, dinosaurs, they were wiped out. There aren't any dinosaurs.
But, of course...
Elaine, if I might actually ask you a question... I'm curious as to what your opinion is on this. If there were, say, two or three plesiosaurs, as you put it, left over after the asteroid catastrophe.
Like, you'd have to have a boy one and a girl one.
Well, yeah. I do realize that.
So,
Because they're reportedly huge, huge creatures, why would they choose Loch Ness? Why wouldn't they be out in the open ocean, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, maybe because of predators in the ocean. I mean, you have sharks and all of these different predators.
Mm-hmm.
And...
looks like maybe Mike has a comment on this.
And what?
Okay. Mike, what are your thoughts on why Loch Ness?
I would first respond to it. They, at least as far as I know, they are the predators.
Exactly.
I mean...
Shut up, Michael.
They're not... Anyway.
Okay, well, we don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're vegetarians.
We don't know enough about them. It hasn't even been established, really, that they exist. So, if such a creature did live in Loch Ness, which personally I believe it does, but it hasn't been established, if this were a plesiosaur who had gotten trapped somehow, if this were a plesiosaur who had survived since the time when plesiosaurs were everywhere, why would they turn up now in Loch Ness?
A theory is actually just forming, and I realize it's very... But in this refers very strongly to my earlier theory about existence being a fabric of sorts.
Okay.
That perhaps there's something unusual with the flow of time in...
Oh.
Because a lot of theories about reality right now are wrapping time and space together, as there are two theories that are directly related to each other, time and space being some of the two things that are correlated.
Right.
So perhaps if there's an anomaly that involves space, such as the Bermuda Triangle, there could very easily be one involving time. If you take it that those anomalies exist, there could very easily be one involving Loch Ness Monster, Loch Ness, involving time.
Okay.
Guys, yours sounds better than mine.
Well, I was going to bring up a very, very prosaic one, which is the idea of the flood, which is mentioned in the Bible, but it's not only... I mean, there is evidence aside from mention in the Bible. There's actual geological evidence that, yes, there was a flood at one time. And some people have speculated that during the time of the flood, when the waters receded, that some plesiosaurs may actually have been trapped inadvertently in Loch Ness, which is very, very deep. We don't know how deep it is. And because of the peat moss that grows around it, there's a certain runoff. It's like making tea. When rainwater goes through that peat moss, the water that runs off is very dark, and it runs into the loch. And Loch Ness is very, very dark and very murky, and it's almost impossible to get in there and see anything.
Is Loch Ness an isolated loch?
I believe it is. Okay.
It
Elaine's
is?
Saying yes, it okay. is. She's done some study on this particular...
Okay. Well, then
when I read that, I thought, oh, okay, well, that's how it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, fair enough. And
yeah.
You know, with the discovery of the coelacanth, which people had thought had been... Okay, I'm getting a couple of blank looks here. And maybe listeners haven't come across this either. There was a fish called a coelacanth, which we had thought was prehistoric. Well, actually was. I mean, there are fossil records of it. It was around a very, very long time ago. And I don't know the exact numbers of years, but a live coelacanth was found by a fisherman fairly recently. And scientists were completely blown away by this because they said, oh, my God, this hasn't been alive. We thought this was only a fossil.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody found a live one.
Yeah.
So clearly it's possible for us as human beings to miss things,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in deep water where we don't get down there.
Right. I mean, when people say something is... Saying that something is impossible is merely assuming that there's something we don't know.
It means I've never seen it before. Right.
So the implausible seems less like the implausible seems less likely than the impossible.
We got a couple of questions on the message board, some really good ones. One wants to know what you guys think of the ancient astronaut theory, and we're actually almost out of time. We only have a few minutes here. Another one wants to know how we can get more young people involved in this. kids who don't have as much background in the field as you guys do. So, anybody? Ancient astronauts, any thoughts? Nazca lines? Nazca planes in Peru? Those giant lines that make like mile-long spiders and monkeys and things that you can only see when you're flying over them, but...
There was actually a young adult fiction book that came out recently that was called, it was parts of the Raven's Gate trilogy, series, and
okay.
It was called Evil Star, and the whole idea was that it basically unlocked a dimension which allowed evil ones into the world and that whole thing, but the idea that there can be such massive structures that really you wouldn't be able to make without being able to see it from above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps we think of extraterrestrials as visiting us within the past 100, 200 years, but it could have gone back thousands of years.
There are cave paintings from thousands of years ago
Richard Dolan was telling me about this. He showed me a couple of those photos.
Yeah, it does appear that...
So perhaps that is...
Yeah, they've turned up... Unidentified objects, shall we say, have turned up in paintings in medieval times. They have turned up in cave paintings. And a lot of the shapes are very similar to what is being photographed and reported even today.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like whatever it is, the same things have been here for thousands of years. They've been coming back. That's another thing. A lot of people think the whole UFO movement started with the Roswell crash in 1947. And that's not the case at all. That was just the first big case that came to the public's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So what about getting young people involved in the field? What about drawing more people into investigation? Because I think we've made some really great strides over the years, but clearly don't have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to get it if the people who are interested either retire or get tired or die off or whatever, and we don't have new people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think? Is this something that any of you might be interested in taking up, or do you think your friends would?
I've kind of thought that even kid shows that involve aliens or beings, like Invader Zim, they might get kids thinking, oh, wow, that little creature is cool, and then they might hear, oh, well, yeah, that's based on, an alien, and you would see it in the show, and you would be like, oh, well, yeah, that's an alien, and then you might think, well, let me Google it, and let me research it, because it seems pretty cool, and I wonder if there are any beings like Zim, or...
Okay, so you think having this on... shows aimed at kids might raise the question, get
mm-hmm.
them thinking about it, and maybe get them starting to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mike, I haven't heard from you just lately. What do you think?
I think I would have to recap basically what Elaine said. Just, I don't know how this could feasibly be done, but to somehow raise all of the information that we've gained so far and bring it to people's attention.
Okay. Actually, that just brought to mind another question, and I'm going to ask Mike and Elaine, because you guys have been to at least one or two UFO conferences
mm-hmm.
now. Jordan, I don't believe you've ever been to one.
I have not.
Okay. Mike and Elaine, what did you think of the ones that you attended? Do you think that was something that young people your age might be interested in? I know there were not very many people your age at the ones we went to.
I think that it would be interesting to most people, at least most people that I can think of.
Okay. So you and your peers, who I should point out are also mainly homeschooled.
Correct.
So, and I do think that seems to change the way you view the world and the way you think about things and the way... It seems to me that homeschooled students tend to be more able to look at reality as it is and deal with it from that point rather than having an idea of how it is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think there's anything that maybe ought to be changed about UFO conferences to make them more interesting to young people, or do you think just more young people should try going to them as they are now?
I think that more young people should just try it, and I've actually, in the conferences that I've went to, I've found a few children there, and I've actually talked to them, and they said this conference is really fun, and there would be a lot of stuff for them to look at, and they would actually get really interested in it.
Okay, so if you were to try to convince Jordan, for example, who has not been to one, what would you tell him about a conference that you've seen to say, you know, you should go because?
Oh, my God, because it's so much fun.
And this guy, like, stood up on a podium and he, like, talked?
He takes a lot of that.
I'm not quite sure what he said, but it was interesting. No, but I think I would say that there are a lot of booths that you can buy. You can buy DVDs and books, and you can buy very interesting books and DVDs about really interesting cases too. So you might be really interested in it.
Okay, I'm getting notes from my producer that we are really, really running out of time. So I don't want to cut you guys off, but we are just about finished here. Does anybody have comments that they want to make or anything else you wanted to say before we wrap it up?
Oh, actually, I do. Happy birthday, JoJo.
Oh, happy birthday to Joe Montaldo. Thanks for remembering that, Elaine.
Happy birthday.
Hey.
Silent yay.
Just back quickly to the issue of raising youth awareness about this, or younger people's awareness about these issues. I think that before I started coming over to this house on a regular basis, I was unaware of most
the
of
the vortex. We are. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was actually unaware of 99% of these things that had happened. Like, I had heard the name Oswald, but I had no idea what it meant. But I think that as soon as I heard some of what it was about, some of the actual information, as soon as I had just the basic facts that you guys had told me and that I had heard from your guys' experiences and some of Mr. Nolan's book, I think that as soon as I got that basic information, my interest just perked. And and at that point, it became very interesting to continue on and learn more about the subject when I have the opportunity.
Okay, so it's getting the information out. My experience is when I'm exposed to something like this, it grips me.
Right.
You know, I hear about a case and I think, oh, my God, I want to know more about that.
Right. I mean, you don't have to have somebody who will teach you all about it.
Yeah.
So as soon as you get that basic information, you'll be able to sort of drive yourself to some extent. And that's something that I think would help a lot, is just getting some basic information out there for.
Well, cool. I'm going to remember that because that's essentially what I try to do with this radio show. I mean, I'm sort of exploring these things for myself, but also because I just want to put this out and make people aware that things like this are happening. And there were about a million topics that I wanted to touch on tonight that we ran out of time for. And, in fact, I'm getting another nudge from Joe, who should be off celebrating his birthday and not pestering me, although Angela's trying to come on with her show, so we do need to wrap it up. Guys, thank you so much. This has been really great having you on here.
Thank you.
I've had an absolute blast.
It was a lot of fun, and we talked about a lot of things that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, so it was nice.
Well, thanks to everybody who was listening. These are two of my children and Rich Dolan's children, Elaine, age 11, Mike, age 13, and a friend of the family, Jordan, age 15. Thanks so much for giving us an insight into what you young people are into these days.
Youngins.
You youngins. Okay, and on that note, we do need to wrap it up because there are more shows come in after us.
Okay,
so,
sorry to interrupt, but Joe, go have a beer.
And have a great birthday.
Happy
birthday.
And you have all been listening to Through the Keyhole live on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and stay tuned for the Joyner Report coming up next with Angela Joyner. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.